Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to the INFJ Whisperer podcast, where I dissect all things INFJ. You are not alone anymore. There are others like you.
So many people in my life that are willing to give their time and effort and energy to me. I'm actually astounded by it. And I'm really grateful to have Dominic on this call with me. He is a recent graduate of a university from the UK, and he studied English literature, which is really beautiful. I love that. And he's actually done a little bit of teaching as well. And the reason I'm bringing him on, and the reason he agreed to do this, thankfully, because he's very busy, is because I've been getting some emails from young INFJs, and I've gotten a lot of them over the years, I would say, where they're confused about what to do with their lives. They have no idea, actually. And they know they should do something because that's what everyone tells them, but they don't know if they should follow their heart or if they should follow their wallet, you know, like to see if they should follow something that would pay them a lot of money, or should they follow something that's gonna make them happy? Will it actually make them happy? And so there's a lot of confusion regarding the whole situation of what to do when you're going into university, what things to choose, what to do with your life there, how to socialize, how to be a normal human being when you are an INFJ and you have no idea how to talk to people, and things like that. So I wanted to talk to Dominic about this because I really think that he has a lot of value to provide here. And I know he's helped a couple of people that I've sent his way, thankfully. And so I wanted to, as I said, bring him on and just ask him questions and just throw everything at him, and he can kind of give us what his feedback is for all those young INFJs who are confused out there. Hello, Dominic.
Hello, it's really nice to be here. Yes. Thank you for getting me on.
Yes, I'm so grateful. I know, as I said, you're very busy. So again, I will keep it short and sweet. Hopefully, I know I have a tendency to talk, so just cut me off.
I also have a tendency. We'll see how this goes.
I know, we don't normally talk, but when we have a subject that we care about, it's like, all right, just be quiet now, because you can't keep on talking for like 3-6 hours straight, you know? So my first question obviously to you is, maybe we can start off actually with a little bit of your own experience. Like, how did you decide on what did you want to do, and how did you get over that? Did you have that confusion in your life? You know, how did you get over it and all that? I would love to hear a little bit about that.
That's a brilliant question, because I think my case is actually very typical of INFJs more generally, because I took 7 years to university, which is quite a while. And I originally went to university straight after finishing A-levels, so sort of school, you know, very normal path. But then I was doing maths at that time. I got about halfway through my year and decided maths wasn't for me. What I really loved was writing. I didn't have an English A-level, so then I had to go back, get the English A-level. Then I came back to do English, and then I decided that I wanted to be a monk, a Buddhist monk. I spent 2 years wanting to be a Buddhist monk, and I sort of neglected my studies. I was still studying, but I wasn't giving them proper attention. Mm-hmm. And then eventually I decided I actually didn't want to be a monk. I did actually want to be a creative writer after all, and did actually want to. So I went 2 years without writing. Then I came back to writing, And
Wow.
now I've decided, actually, no, I do want to be a creative writer. And so I spent my third year, I finally got around to my third year. When I finally did my third year, decided that's what I really wanted to do, English literature. But it really took me a while to discover what I wanted to do, what I loved. And I think you can have so many interests in INFJ. And that was for me. I had so many interests and it took me a long time to decide, no, this one interest is the one I want to prioritize above the others.
Right. Yeah, that's brilliant. And actually, that's one point that you bring up over and over again when I speak to you about young INFJs or INFJs in general, is that we have a lot of interests. And, you know, we're like, all right, should I, for me, I actually, you know, did a little bit of like manga drawing at one point. And I was like, do I want to become a manga, you know, artist? Of course not, because I love reading them. But I'm not really like the person who's going to be good at drawing them, at least not right now. And so it's kind of funny because you get attracted to all these interesting things that we do, and we're like, oh, I want to do this. I think I'd be great at it, or I would love to do it. And maybe I'm going to become awesome at it if I just practice, practice, practice. And then we lose interest and then we go to something else. So that's something that you probably notice as well for yourself or in other INFJs.
Yeah, absolutely. I was talking to one of my other INFJ university friends the other day, ahead of this call. I thought, shoot, that would be brilliant to get two INFJ's opinion on this one topic. She said she often gets frustrated, like more than once she decided, she's a chemical engineer, and more than once she's been deciding, oh, actually, no, this isn't for me. I should leave this behind. Maybe, you know, maybe do poetry or something, which is obviously quite a step in chemical engineering. But she said, like, don't give up. It's just like, I think this is like something really interesting I heard the other day I was thinking about. It was at a Catholic wedding, and the priest said, some people think that love should sustain a marriage, but in fact, it's the other way around. Let your marriage sustain your love. And I think it's something like that with university. Like, if you've chosen the right course, and that's a difficulty in itself, but if you choose the right course, let the course be the reason. Study the course in a way that means you continue to love it. Because it's easy to end up hating it, and easy to feel frustrated, and easy to feel overwhelmed. And then you've got some other interest, you know, you've got manga drawing, like, well, I can do that. I'll just skip, especially if you're first year, like, I'll skip onto that. But no, I think try and find a way to study things in a way that's going to continue to keep you loving it. Remember why you love it. You know, if you like poetry, don't just study the poetry on the course. You know, study poetry outside of that. To remind yourself, no, this is what I love. This is something I want to be doing in my life.
No, I love that. That's so beautiful. It's poetry, the way the Catholic priest said it too. You know, it's so easy to imagine that there's something better out there, and it's the paradox of choice. There's actually a book like that as well, and I love that book because it literally, truly is the world that we live in right now, because there is literally, you can be anything you want to be. Perhaps not an astronaut, but actually now you can go to space as well. So perhaps you can't even be an astronaut, you know? So there's nothing that you can't do, especially if you live in a developed world like us, or like you have more opportunities. Even, you know, people in the developing world perhaps have as many opportunities as we do, or almost as many opportunities as we do. So it really can, you have the basket of choices of becoming bigger and bigger and bigger. And that kind of creates a little bit of like, oh my God, fear of missing out. Am I missing out if I don't do this? Or if I don't do that, maybe I should be doing this. It just creates a lot of confusion within you. For me as well, the same thing, you know, I'm a writer, a creative writer as well as you are. And I'm like, I love writing. I love writing. I love writing. And then some moments I'll be like, oh my gosh, should I just find something else to do? Like, really, this is not something that I want to do for the rest of my life. Am I going to be able to do this for the rest of my life? And all of these doubts come up for me. But thankfully, my writer part of me is strong enough that I can come back to it and says, no, actually, I love writing and I'm going to keep on doing this until I die. So yeah, I totally, totally resonate with what you're saying. Do you have any other things that you kind of would tell people who are, you know, in this state of confusion?
I think what was really, really interesting. So when I decided not to do maths anymore, so I'd been, you know, that's, you know, 2 years of A level, you know, I did further maths, physics. It wasn't any, no humanities. So, you know, that was pretty much blocked off my humanities road. It wasn't easy. I had to sacrifice a lot to get there. So it was a big choice. So then it was, so then obviously you could ask, well, why would I possibly choose that? And I think, because when I was doing maths, I liked it because I was good at it. I think it's easy to like things that you're good at, but that doesn't mean you love them. Because I realized what I was doing is I was spending my time writing. I was spending my time reading things like Gulliver's Travels and other like novels. I was beginning to collect books, old like classic fiction. And then I was realizing, what am I doing? You know, I put the maths down and I've not done it since. But I couldn't put the writing down. I couldn't put the books down. So that's why that was the thing to do. It's like the thing that you're drawn to most, that's the thing you really love. I think that helps, can really help answer some of your questions.
Yes, no, that's really, really powerful. And unfortunately, the question that comes for me is that what if what you're drawn to is something that's not going to make you money? Or if that's an idea that, you know, that now is that perpetuated. Question. Oh, what if it doesn't make me money? And I'm like destitute and bankrupt or living on the streets because I chose, I don't know, whatever you chose. Yeah. So what would you say to those people?
Well, that's a really, really good question. I would say that it's actually perhaps, I would say do some research into things like transferable skills and so forth. Because you might find out that if you do the course you love, it's not actually, for example, I did English literature, which some people say, well, is there anything you can do with that? Actually, a lot of employers like that because it's very, very versatile. You know, that can be anything from freelance, which is what I'm sort of interested in, to actually, you know, going in editorial work, journalism, but also just there's lots of companies that just need people to be able to write well. To be able to write well is a skill that most people need. If it's art history or something like that, I can understand why people are more nervous, but so I can't answer that question for people who want to do things like art history, but I would say just do some research, you know, see and do look on like freelance, what freelance is available once you've done this.
Yes, and I would definitely add to it that in fact, a lot of employers, like you said, are looking for people with fine arts degrees. And in fact, a lot of business schools and a lot of business corporations are looking for people with fine arts degrees because they're able to think outside the box. They think in ways that perhaps a person who's an engineer might not think in a similar manner, or a person who gets a business degree perhaps might not be able to think in a similar manner. So there is a lot of opportunity out there. The only problem is that we kind of put ourselves into these little boxes and say, okay, so I've studied English literature. That means I need to become an English literature professor. And that's the only path for me. And I can only do this and there's nothing else for me. And then we kind of like shut ourselves off from all the different possibilities out there. And we just don't even pay attention to it. The universe is poking our back and says, hey, there's that opportunity there. And we're like, but no, I said, I'm going to be an English literature professor. And I only am going to do that. And like, that's the whole thing about INFJs. Like you kind of get a little bit narrow-minded about our path, and you shouldn't be doing that.
No, that's really interesting because I was just actually, there's somebody the other day I sort of was helping out, and she was originally in finance, doing really, really well in finance, and she's now going to do a master's degree in creative writing. She wants to do creative writing, and it really made me think, because I was able to help her out, and it made me think, well, I can't do finance at all, but there's somebody else in the world who can do that finance, but yet still would want the abilities that I have now have. Well, that's a quite a special thing to think, to realise that there are people out there who actually really, really want what you will develop if you choose the path that you love, because they will choose that maybe after doing something they didn't love and making the money. So, you know, it is something to consider.
Yes, absolutely. And I do want to add that, you know, it took me 15 years to get to where I am right now, where I'm doing exactly what I love to do. Now, of course, my path is a lot longer and I took a lot of detours. I don't recommend that for sure. But like, I do want to say that, you know, don't be so like short term in your thinking. Don't believe that you have to figure out the path right away. If you don't, then you're just going to be destitute and everything's going to suck for the rest of your life. No, in fact, actually, you can switch careers. People change their careers 7 times or 9 times in their lifetimes, apparently. That's the stat I've seen last. And so, you know, you can start off doing something that perhaps you think that you want to do. And then if that doesn't work out, you can always switch over to something else. And there's no one that's saying, hey, you need to do one thing for the rest of your life. And that's the only thing you can do. And that's it. You know?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's you know, to bring it down to the employer's level, if people are sort of really interested in that particular aspect, like the employers now often look for strength-based employment, so you often look at your strengths, so you say these are my strengths and these will be developed by whatever degree you take. You say these are my strengths, and then careers advisors will help you find a career that suits your strengths, because actually even as far back as I know, my dad, I think, wanted originally to be an engineer a mechanic, and they actually didn't let him in because they said, actually, you're almost too clever for this job, because actually, you know, your skill set, you'll get bored with this job. So, you know, if you have skills that go beyond a certain job that you might think you want, they'll say, actually, no, you're going to get bored. We know from experience. So
yes,
I thought that was a really interesting idea.
I love that. That's so brilliant. I love that. Actually, I'm reading The Giver right now by Lois Lowry. And in that, it's like a dystopian novel where they kind of separate the population according to what they think they're going to be suited to. So there are some people who are just nurturers and they love taking care of kids, and they're put into that category. And it's kind of funny because when I was listening to it, I'm like, this actually sounds pretty good. Like, it doesn't seem dystopian to me. I'm still in the beginning of the novel. But I'm like, it's pretty good because, like, I feel like people should be kind of directed into certain occupations based on what their skill sets are and what their inclinations are. Whereas what happens in our society, or at least in the Indian culture that I'm from, is that there's only three professions you should go into: engineering, law, and doctor, and or medicine, and that's it. And there's no other possibility out there. Even though you draw beautifully, you can't go and become an artist. You have to become a doctor or an engineer. If you're a man, become an engineer. If you're a woman, then become a doctor. And if you're like either, you can become a lawyer. And like, just that's it, you know? So it really makes me happy when I see people saying, okay, so these are your inclinations. This is what you'd be good at. And for me, whenever I would do any test from the beginning of my life, I got the same answer every single time. I don't know about you, Dominic, but for me, it was the same thing over and over again. They said I should be a motivational speaker or some kind of speaker, and I should be in the creative field like marketing or writing or something creative. And it always came back like that. And it was really fascinating to me that I've kind of ended up in these situations, in these two kind of careers, but in my own weird way that I've kind of sculpted it. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And, you know, it's like the INFJ thing. Like, if you're going to put INFJ somewhere, you probably wouldn't put them in, like, a really boring routine desk job, because they will just lose their mind if they have to do that. Yeah, and you have to love. Absolutely. And the thing is, actually, this is something that lecturers and monks both told me. Like, you have to love what you do. You will not survive here, in a sense. Mm-hmm. You'll not stay here if you don't love what you do. There's something about that. You might say, well, I should do maths because I'll make more money doing that. Or I should do business.
Yes.
Well, if you hate it, you won't put much effort into it, and so you won't get a good grade. Probably won't get a good grade. Maybe some people can, but you know, you might not get a good grade. If you don't love the money, see, some people do business. I think they love the idea of the money they're going to get, and that's what sustains them. But INFJs, some of us want money, but most of us, I think, don't have that same love of money. We have love of creativity and ideas more strongly. And so those things are tending to pull us away. So we're not going to be motivated by the money we get from the business. We're not motivated by the course. So what is motivating us to actually get that really good grade? You know, we feel like we should do it, but we can't just do things because we feel like we should. We have to have something really drawing us in, I think.
Yes, absolutely. And the problem is that you might be like, all right, well, I can kind of do the things I love on my part-time basis, or like when I'm free on my weekends, and I'll just do something that I don't like that much, but I make a lot of money from. The problem with the INFJ, as you said, is that we will just not care. And soon thereafter, you'll get fired from that job, because it happens to me all the time. Like, I was in many jobs that I did not like, and I didn't necessarily get fired from all of them. But a lot of times the person would be like, do you actually really want to be here? And I was like, I actually don't. And a couple of times I got let go, and a couple of times I actually left before they were going to let me go, or before like they even thought of the possibility of letting me go. The problem was that they all saw me as a very smart, creative person, and they really wanted to keep me. They were just like, you're just not motivated. And I was like, yes, I know, because I don't care to sell software or whatever I was selling at that point. So it really is that you might be like, oh, well, but I can do it. Well, no, you can't. All right. If you're an INFJ, you're not going to be able to do it for long, and you're going to hate your entire life for it, and you're going to get really depressed. And I would rather be an INFJ that makes a little bit less money but loves what she does, then be an INFJ that makes a lot of money and hates absolutely everything and everyone, because that's just not the kind of INFJ or the kind of person I want to be on this planet. What do you say?
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree.
Because
it can, you know, it's not just because it does really get into your mental health, I think. That can really eat away at you. And I think you know, there's that thing of lots of people want to be happy or they want to be rich. But I think trying to find meaning in life, that could be, obviously you need to take care of the basis. You can't just, you know, most people don't want to be homeless. That, I think, is actually quite a reasonable thing not to want
of
to
course.
Be.
Of course.
Or you don't want to be starving. You don't want to be a literally starving artist. But yeah. I think as long as you're willing to be slightly flexible, absolutely. I think what you want to be following is try and follow what brings meaning to your life. Because it's almost like maybe that sense of meaning in your life is actually telling you that this is where you should go. It's almost like an intuitive sense that this is where I should be in the world. You know, there's something about when you have that sense of meaning, like when you're in a really good meditation session, you know, something like that. I think there's something like that feeling when you're really in the right place. Your life just feels so rich. It feels so inner. There's so much inner wealth that even if the outside world is not as rich, you really feel like you feel like you won't regret it on your deathbed. Nobody, you know, I don't think most people don't say, I wish I made more money on their deathbed. Yeah. They do, but people will say, I wish I had a more meaningful life. It's like Seneca. I think he said something like, life is not short. Life is not short if you use it properly. So use it properly. So find meaning in your life and then you can die in peace. But otherwise, if you don't do that, you won't die in peace. And that's something to think about, I think.
Yes, I love that. That's so perfectly said. Life is not short, but I think we make it short by not doing the things that we want to do. And if you are, like, if you're an INFJ listening and you're looking at Dominic and I and thinking, oh, but you guys have to figure it out. I just don't. And, you know, you don't know how, what I'm going through and all that. And it's always easy for us to say because we're kind of looking at it from hindsight. And you're probably like, oh, but I'm in the midst of it. And I can't see a light at the end of the tunnel. Is there something that you would tell these people who are just like really in the midst of it and they just can't see anything, any positive hope?
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I would say that you need to start small. It's a small piece of advice, but really start at small things. You know, the thing is that any changes that you make in your life are going to probably cause you some stress. You're probably going to be fighting to doing them at first. You know, I had to go through so much fear just to get to the place where I am now. Yes. And you know, there's so much you have to. It's sort of like there's this thing in Dante's Divine Comedy when he's going from purgatory to heaven and he has to leave his guide behind one, so he has to go alone and he has to go through fire and literally let his body be burned up. I think something about that, like to get to heaven, you have to go through the fire, right? There's something about that I think is really powerful. And I think that's really true. So I know it's not necessarily very encouraging to tell somebody to walk through fire to get to where they want to be, but I think, you know, take the small steps and don't avoid things. I think that's another thing about INFJs. We're good at, we like avoiding things. So consider the possibilities. Consider what will happen if you don't act. Don't just think about what will happen if you do act. Because you can think, if I'll do all those actions, think about all the stress I'll go through. But think about all the stress you'll go through if you don't do that. You know, you say, well, I don't want to go through that fire. But if you don't go through the fire, you're still in purgatory, right? Like if you don't go through, you know, the divine comedy, you don't want to be in purgatory for the rest of your life and, you know, doing all that suffering. You want to get to heaven, which means you have to think, actually, in the long term, is it worse to be where I am today? Is it worse to be here than it is to be where I want to go? And, you know, really weigh up, you know, what sort of hell could I make for myself in the next 5 years if I don't change? And what sort of heaven could I make for myself in the next 5 years if I do sort of take my virtues and take my strengths and really, really try and really try to make something of them?
Wow, that's so powerful. Oh my God, I should just snip this part out and put it everywhere. This is really well said. I really loved how you used purgatory and heaven to kind of create this analogy. That's really well done. Really well done. I really love that. Yeah, I just really think that it is about suffering in the present moment so your future self doesn't have to suffer. And everything is about that. You know, you don't eat the chocolate cake right now, so your future self is skinny, or not skinny, but like fit. Or, you know, you do the exercise today, a little bit of suffering right now, but then you're fit later and you're like, you're healthy. Or like so many different ways, like you save money right now and you don't buy that purse that you want or whatever it might be. But then you have that money for the future and you can be free and retire faster or whatever it might be. So a lot of things that I love about suffering right now a little bit, going through that fire of hell, not so much hell, but like some bits and pieces of it. And then eventually being like, all right, yeah, no, actually I had to go through that. And then you'll be like us looking back at it in hindsight and saying, oh my God, that's exactly what I had to do. And my life meant exactly how it's supposed to be to get me to this point right now. And, you know, it's so perfectly laid out because the universe is so perfect. Yeah, I really like that. I'm really grateful you said that. Anything else to add on that?
Well, I will say that I don't regret not becoming a mathematician, and I don't regret not becoming a monk.
Yes.
Those are things I thought I wanted at one point in my life, but I don't regret them. Yes. But I turned my back and I did it, and I don't regret that at all, even though, you know, I had to make sacrifices. You know, going back to A-level, once you've been to university, of course I didn't want to do that. And, you know, I had no friends at A-level, you know, when I went back to that A-level, you know, I was on my own then.
Yes.
But, you know, that was worth it in the end. I don't look back and think I regret that. I look back now and think, that was how my life began to get to a point where I felt like it had meaning, where I felt like, yes, I'm glad to wake up in the morning, right? That's not a small thing.
Mm-hmm. No, oh my God, that's so brilliant, because every morning you wake up with this anticipation and this joy and gratitude, and you're like, oh my God, I can't wait to get up in the morning so I can do all the different things that I get to do because I'm so lucky and I'm so alive, and you feel so, so thankful and for every breath. And like, it was my birthday a couple of days ago. I just turned 38, and it was really fascinating to me because I was like, I've never had a birthday. Well, for the last few birthdays I've been in this state, but I really felt in this birthday that I have been in this, I'm in exactly the exact space spot that I want to be. And there's nothing I would change, and there's nothing that I would do differently. And I'm so exactly perfectly where I want to be. And so I really love that, because I really want that for every person, not just INFJs. But INFJs, because I'm kind of biased towards all of the INFJs out there. But, you know, I want everyone to be in that space. And I think that starts off with choosing the right spot, choosing the right vocation, kind of, in university. That's really where it all begins. And if you don't, it kind of sets the bar for the rest of your life as well, because you might not choose the right partner. You might end up choosing the wrong job. You might end up choosing the wrong city to live in. And all of that just cascades out into just a horrendous life, which is how I lived for the longest time. So I don't want that for all of you. And so that's why I wanted to do this video. I also wanted to speak a little bit about socialization in university. That was something that came up a lot as well, because a lot of INFJs, younger INFJs, were apprehensive because they go into university and they're like, oh my gosh, I was terrible in high school at socializing, but I want to have good memories in university. How do I do that? Do you have any suggestions?
Yeah, I was just about to bring this up because it's such an important point.
Yeah.
I mean, there's several points here with things like also with housemates. We'll get onto that in a moment. Because it's that, well, I've heard various sort of techniques. Like I know one INFJ does positive visualization. So she imagines herself being really confident, quite extroverted, before going into the social situation. And she finds that very helpful. Does that for a few minutes and can find that quite helpful in the actual situation.
Right.
But I think there's also useful things like, are you actually socially anxious, or are you overwhelmed? Because those are two different states. And I think this is something I found really helpful, because a lot of INFJs are what I'd call highly sensitive people. This is Elaine Aron's term. We have nervous systems that pick up more in our environment, so we're more easily overwhelmed, more easily tired. And you'll know this, because you'll just end up exhausted after social events. That's not anxiety, that's being overwhelmed. And the way to deal with that is to say, I need to take regular breaks in social situations. Mm-hmm. But if you are socially anxious, if you are actually just scared, like you just find yourself, you know, fidgeting, swallowing, you know, your voice breaks whenever you're talking in a social situation. You know, if you have, or your heart rate's really increasing, being overwhelmed can also increase your heart rate. But, you know, I think you know when you're anxious, you know how terrified you can be and how much you don't want to do it, and you might avoid it again. Do the INFJ's avoidance thing. Well, it's really interesting how they actually sort of treat this in sort of CBT terms. It's like, okay, so you're afraid of people. Okay, go into the street and ask 20 different strangers at a time. Just do something small like that. Yeah, because suddenly you begin to learn, oh, wait a second, strangers are not going to like bite me, or they're not sharks. They're not, dangerous. They're bears. You start asking them the time. And then you could, small things like this, just start doing small things that begin to make you realize that social situations are not quite as overwhelming as they might appear to be. I think that's a really, really good start, but it's not easy. I would say it takes some time. Over time, you know, we're quite confident now. I don't know how about you as a child. I know that I, as a child, I was like the most, one of the most socially anxious and awkward people.
Yes, around. Me too.
Like, I was terrified. But you can. You really just, it's by slow growth. It's by slowly pushing yourself into new environments. And the thing is, you don't get over your fear by avoiding things. You know, if you avoid things, that's just a symptom of having the fear. If you want to get over the fear, it's like the going through the fire thing again. You know, if you want to get over the fear, you have to do these small little things to slowly erode that. You can't avoid. You have to face them. You have to face the fear. And the more you face the fear, at first you're going to be awkward. You're not going to do it. You know, you're going to stumble over words and so forth. Other people don't care quite as much as you think they do. But you're going to stumble over your words. They, you know, you're going to be awkward. That's how it begins. But as you do that over time, eventually you begin to become more confident. And you begin to become the person who can handle social situations. So there is, it really can, you can get there, but you have to, you know, you have to, you can't avoid it. By avoiding it is not the way to get there. So, you know, I understand, I appreciate that people are apprehensive, but you know, there are things you can do. And I really would suggest that people do these small things and really just try them, just to see what happens. You know, just try, ask 20 people at a time, just do that just once and see what happens. See if it, see if you begin to get less nervous on the 20th time than on the first time. And if so, then you know that it's true, that you can get less nervous about things.
Yes, yes. I love that. I really love that. By the way, CBT, for anyone who's thinking, is not CBD. It's not that like thing that everyone's talking about. CBT is cognitive behavioral therapy. It's like it's a kind of therapy method that's really popular and actually very effective from what I've heard. So that's, I just wanted to say for people who are wondering. And I really love what you said about, you know, trying things out and actually realizing the fact of the matter is everyone in university is as scared as you of socializing because it's their first time there. They're coming from high school. It's all new to them unless they're extremely extroverted and like they're just crazy about like socializing and they don't care. Everyone has a little bit of nervousness in them. So realize that actually that's something that I go into every situation with. I always kind of think, oh, everyone's as nervous as me. And so everything's going to be perfectly fine, even if they're not. I always assume that people are. And in fact, a lot of times they are. And a lot of times and I end up consoling them and making them feel good about themselves because I'm an INFJ, that's what we do. But it's really interesting to me because I'll go into situations where people are like, oh yeah, you must be an extrovert. And I'm like, no, I'm actually an introvert and people will never believe me. And I'm sure people are thinking the same thing about Dominic as well. They're like, you both seem like extroverts. No, they're not. We've learned to be extroverted or we learned to display extroverted skills in these situations because that's how we've built ourselves over the last, for me, 15 years, and for you, I don't know, 5 years or something. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what was the other thing that we were saying that we really wanted to talk about? Sorry, go on.
Yes, housemates is the other thing.
Yes.
Because the housemate social situation, living in halls, I think it's even worse in America, where I think make people genuinely like two people in one room, which just sounds like a nightmare. I've never had to do that.
Three?
Two, I think. I think like
oh, two, like, good. Oh my gosh.
In dorms, yeah. For me, it's like you need a week. For me, at least, you need at least one space to be alone in the world. If that's not your room, then you need to find somewhere where you can go and be alone. You know, once a day. Otherwise, you'll just lose your sense of who you are. I lose my sense of who I am. I don't know if other people, but you know, I get so overwhelmed if I have no time alone. It's like I don't know exactly what it is, but it's that feeling. I don't quite know who I am. It's like I feel so overwhelmed. It's like.
Yes.
I'm not sure who I am. So that's one thing, you know, you find some time, you need to find your alone time and your alone space and make time for that in the day. But more importantly, I think, is that you have to learn how to tell people what you really think. Because one of the things with INFJs is that we don't tell people what we really think. And then we build up resentment against them and frustration. We sacrifice, we want short-term peace. You know, we don't want to say things that don't make people uncomfortable in the short term. So when they're really annoying us, we don't tell them. Unfortunately, that leads to long-term frustration and instability. So we sacrifice the long-term for the short-term. And, you know, with a housemate, that can be catastrophic. You know, I've heard about, you know, I never had to go through this all that much myself, but, you know, I've heard about people saying, you know, most of the housemates all leave angry by Christmas. You know, this is in second year. You know, all leave angry at Christmas because it's just like, I can't stand to live with those people anymore. And your INFJs, it can be even worse because we just don't tell people when they're annoying us until we get so stressed. And then suddenly, out of nowhere, it's like, you haven't told me about any of these things. But suddenly, you know, I find somebody, listing off, well, look at all these things that you did, and you know how inconsiderate you were. It's like, how could I be inconsiderate? I didn't know that any of those things were problems for you because you never told me, even though I've obviously been annoying you for like 3 weeks now.
Yes, exactly. Wow.
Yeah. And so how can you, again, it's that avoidance thing. It's like, okay, for short term, actually don't just think, well, if I don't talk about this, it'll get better in the future. No, time will not just heal this on its own accord, probably. You know, think about how bad things could get if you don't confront it. Because it's like debt, you know, if you just try and ignore it, it gets worse, it doesn't get better. Yes. It's the same thing as a sort of debt that builds up when you just don't confront problems in a household, and things like that. If you don't confront that problem, and I guess with friendships as well, potentially, if you don't confront the problems that are there, they can really spiral out, and then suddenly you end up in a much worse situation than you had to be in, you know, and a much more comfortable situation than you had to be in, because you wanted that short-term comfort of not saying what you really thought.
Yes, you're brilliant. Yes, this is exactly true. And I love how you phrase it. And I think I'm going to actually steal that phrase to say short-term peace versus long-term suffering, or whatever you said. That was brilliant. I really love that, because I think that we do that a lot. And I know I've done that recently. I've just actually been dealing with a person and I'm like, I should say this out loud, but I didn't. And then obviously it kind of deteriorated into a much worse situation. So if you're going to have housemates or roommates, as they call it in, or dorm mates, as they call it in America, then, because that's the first time I've heard housemates. And I was like, oh, that's a British way of saying it. So if you're going to have roommates or, you know, dorm mates, then you're probably going to want to follow Dominic's advice and say, okay, tell them exactly how you feel. Don't worry about it. They're not going to hate you for it, or they're not going to go berserk on you, or they're not going to be like, oh my God, this person told me this one little thing, now I'm never going to talk to them again. We make up all these stories in our head saying that, oh, we're not allowed to say what's in our mind. We are, you know, we're allowed to say what we want, and they're allowed to say what they want. And then it's a conversation. It's not the end of the world. It doesn't mean that you're going to completely deteriorate that relationship. It's just conversation. It's communication. It's called being a human being on this planet. And so, you know, try it out and see how it does not deteriorate anything. In fact, actually it brings you closer to that person, because the vulnerability that you show allows them to show them vulnerability as well. And then you kind of build a relationship that goes deeper. The trust goes deeper, the relationship goes deeper, and you actually become closer because of it. So really try. I know, and I'm saying it from a place where I have a hard time doing it too. So I'm really trying myself as well. And that's why I live by myself, because I can't do roommates. But I do know that when I'm in a friendship and it's kind of deteriorating because of my inability to say what I really want to say, then I really try to be like, all right, send them a voice note. Or, you know, that's the best way for me to do it. It's like, I'll just send them a voice note instead of typing it out. Or I'll try to have a conversation face to face. And so that's really, really important for you to do. Follow Don's advice and say it out loud. Do not hold it back. Do not hold resentment. Don't get frustrated and then leave in a huff or door slam them at the end of the day, because that's usually what we end up doing, right?
Yeah, on the door slam point, because something I heard the other day, I think it's Anna Advent, she said something about really interesting about forgiveness. And she said that it's forgiveness that makes action possible, because, you know, we're all afraid. We all don't know what's going to happen in the future when we act. So we all have some fear about actually acting, and, you know, should we say what we mean? You know, we're afraid of saying what we mean, or we're afraid of saying, we might think, we're afraid of not saying what we mean. You know, we can be afraid of both. But it's forgiveness that makes that possible, because it takes away that fear of acting, because we say, if we can mutually expect forgiveness, we can actually say, oh yeah, there's actually a way of moving on. Even if I do make a mistake, and we will make mistakes, we all make mistakes, we all find out we're that particular type of idiot, right? Yes. we all make mistakes. We all find out, oh no, I'm that type of insecure, I'm that type of, you know, naive, I'm that type of inconsiderate. And we all find this out at certain points in our lives. But we need forgiveness, and we need to offer forgiveness and receive forgiveness. So we can actually act in the world and be, you know, be sort of together and as human beings can get along. I know it's not necessarily easy to forgive, but to just sort of remember the need for forgiveness, so that we can actually act in the world and to not be totally afraid, and so other people don't have to be afraid around us. If they know that we're the sort of person who, at the drop of a hat, will just say, no, you know, you're out, you know, I don't want to be your friend anymore. You know, they'll just walk on eggshells around us, and then there's nothing sincere there. You can't go deep if that's the case. So you need that forgiveness, I think, to be able to go deep with somebody and to be able to risk to have to risk the various actions in life and the various exchanges.
Yeah, that's really well said. I really love that. I never thought about it as a forgiveness thing, but yeah, that's exactly it. That's what it entails. It's not like forgiveness has to be this huge thing where you're like, when you sit down and you kind of have this huge conversation, it's just, it can be day to day. It can be like you forgiving that person for leaving the toilet seat up or down or whatever it might be, or, you know, forgiving them for not putting the utensils in the way that you want them to be put, you know, like there's so many different things that we have in our head that we want done. So yeah, I really love that. That's a very simple and soft way of looking at it, instead of always being like, oh my God, I'm in competition with this person and I have to get my way or it's the highway. And, you know, we get very dictatorial about things sometimes as an INFJ. I know I do it for sure. Yeah, no, I love that. I think that I want to end this conversation here because I know that people have short attention spans. Also, I don't want people to be listening for hours on end to my diatribes. But please, if any younger INFJs listen to this and you have a question and you're kind of going into university or college or community college or whatever it might be, or you were kind of trying to figure out what you should be doing with your life, if you have questions, please put them down and Dominic and I will answer them, or we'll do another session and then we'll answer them in video format. So I'll either comment or I'll do another video. Hopefully, if you have time, we'll do another video and we'll set up so that we can answer more of your questions, because I think this is really important, because I really, really want you all to be set up properly for the rest of your life. And this is the beginning of the rest of your life. So it really is important that you do it right. And thank you so much for coming, Dominic. I really, really, really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me. I really hope this helps people. And yeah, I'm absolutely happy to do another session and to answer any questions that sort of come our way. So this has just been brilliant. Great. Thank you again.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And again, everyone, please do comment below and let me know what you thought. And I know Dominic would love to hear from you as well. So thank you again. And I shall see you all the next time around. Bye.
Thanks for listening. If you want to put a face to the voice, you can check out my YouTube channel, Boom Shakar. Bye for now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.